There are some old jokes that sometimes, though you think maybe everyone knows them, they just fit too well not to retell them. I want to tell a story this morning about a monk who took a vow of silence. And he committed himself to go to the top of a mountain and committed himself to find God there. And he was permitted by his abbot back at the monastery to only come down from the mountain once a year and to say two words. And then he would go back to the top of the mountain and seek God again. Well, after 1 year passed, the monk came down and all the other monks gathered at the monastery, and the abbot was there, and they were anxious to find out what the monk had learned on that mountain. He said, "You have this opportunity to share two words with us before you climb back up the mountain. What do you have to say to us?" And he said, "Cave stinks." And then he turned and he went back up to the top of the mountain. And they didn't see him for a whole another year. And another year passed and he came back down and he met with the monks and the abbot there again. And they were anxious to hear what he had discovered spending that year up on the mountain. And he said, tell us your two words. And he said, "Food, cold." And he went back up to the mountain for another year. And another year passed, he came back down and he met with the monks and the abbot there, and they were anxious to hear what he had to say, and he actually opened up and began talking to them. He said, "You know, I believe I've spent enough time up on the mountain. I'm ready to come back into the world again." And the abbot said, "Well, it's might as well. You've done nothing but complain the last 3 years." I want to talk about silence this morning and its role in creating us anew, to make us a new thing. They were told in the prophet Isaiah that the God is making a new thing. And I want to talk about the role that silence has to play in that, and it ties into our gospel lesson from John this morning. There is this constant, recurring, but subtle teaching or presence in the Bible, this current in the Bible that calls us to silence. If we're to find God, it calls us to a silence to discover something called awareness, or what Jesus called watchfulness. You remember when the disciples were praying and he told them to be watchful. And this awareness that develops out of a silence in the presence of God can develop a strength for us, an endurance, a rest, a peace within us. Even in the middle of some of life's greatest storms, if we have learned to practice silence and to develop this awareness of God's presence within us, we can, even in the greatest struggles of life, yet become what the psalmist called an unshakable mountain. Though the weather pattern around us varies from day to day and can be stormy, can be sunny, can be windy, can be hail, winter, whatever it is, yet we can become an unshakable mountain in the presence of those things in our lives. God desires to make us that. He wants us to move in the world as an unshakable mountain. He desires us to be a new thing. That psalm that I just alluded to in Psalm 125 says, "Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken, but endures forever." So God desires to make us into this new thing, into this unshakable mountain, because if you're like me in the early part of my life, and many of us in life today are anything but an unshakable mountain, we're easily worked up into a frenzy, we're easily upset, we live from our emotions, we are easily angered at others, we're easily offended, we're easily controlled by this nonstop barrage of thoughts that are in our minds, and we just follow a strand of thought, and we follow it wherever it takes us. And we kind of just live our lives in that frenzy, that disorganization of what we call life. But God wants to make us a new thing. He wants us to be that unshakable mountain where we no longer live in fear. We no longer live fearful and upset by the world. so that we can do the one thing necessary for our lives, and that is to live our life adoring God and being constantly aware of His presence, so that His thoughts become our thoughts, so that the Lord's thoughts become our thoughts, and they come pouring into our mind, as we said last week, and they feed our soul, and as our soul develops into an unshakable mountain, it manifests into our lives, in what are in our words and in our deeds, in our moods, in our temperaments, in our character, so that we become ambassadors for Christ, as Paul called it. A little bit about my experience with silence. My first introduction to silence actually came to me in seventh grade history, of all things. Mr. Goodrich's class. We were working through a textbook of European history in the 1600s. I can remember where the paragraph was on the textbook. And it talked about the Quakers. I'd never heard of the Quakers before. And it spoke of the Quakers as this people who had committed themselves to find God by sitting together in silence. And I thought, well, that's an odd thing, but it caught my attention, and I sort of didn't do anything with it, but I put it in my toolbox, and my spiritual toolbox, and sort of let it set there and didn't do anything with it. And then high school came along, and I moved from my home up near Terre Haute, Indiana, to down to Kentucky onto a farm, and it was a farm that was quite isolated. There was not a whole lot of people around. My brothers were all grown, so it was just kind of me on the farm by myself with my parents, and this was before electronics and cell phones and all those things to keep you busy. So I started hiking. I just kind of went out into the woods and then around the farm just to kill the time. And I realized without doing it with any holy intent that God was out there. And He was in those quiet walks, and that He was speaking to me even as a teenager. And when I answered the call to pastoral ministry back in 1998 as a Methodist by that time, it was no surprise to me, but it was a big surprise to my district superintendent that I wanted to attend a Quaker seminary. she was quite surprised by that, and I had to do some splaining when she asked me why. But I ended up enrolling at Earlham School of Religion, which is a Quaker seminary, and while on campus, I learned to sit quietly with my Christian brothers and sisters and to listen, and began to develop an awareness that Christ was within me. And I speak a lot about that we'll not find Christ out there. And that comes from that experience being directed toward the Bible, what the Bible teaches, that God doesn't live out there. If you could get on a spaceship and fly a zillion miles, heaven is not a place. It's a space. It's an experience of our lives. It exists and it's real. But Jesus said the kingdom of God is within us. And we have to find that kingdom. And there's a manner to discover that kingdom within. So I learned how to sit quietly with my brothers and sisters up there. But as a good Methodist, I knew eventually I'd have to get into a Methodist seminary. And so I switched over and gained a lot of great experiences there at Asbury as well. But about 5 years ago, I wanted to deepen my understanding and experience of silence even more. So I discovered a center over in Louisville affiliated with St. Agnes Catholic Church, where Father Joe Miller was teaching contemplative prayer or setting in silence with God. And so I finished some courses there with him. So I've been working at this for a while, putting these different tools in my spiritual toolbox and working with silence for some time now. But I've not always been faithful at it, but I've learned to develop this practice of sitting with God in silence and just listening. Then you think, well, what's that all about? What would that possibly accomplish? Have you ever just tried to sit in silence and seek God? You realize how difficult it is to find God. And I think a lot of our lives are spent in busyness and with entertainment and with work, because we're scared of that. We're scared of being alone with God. And we find that when we start spending time alone and in silence with God, we start realizing that there is this constant assault of thoughts that are entering our mind. And I say assault because it's just nonstop. We're just constantly being bombarded with thoughts, and you realize I'm not in control of my life as I thought I was. Because what we do is we have this thought enter into us, which creates an emotion, and that emotion creates commentary, where we start commenting on that emotion, and before we know it, we're carried away, and we've created this whole story about whether it's maybe something that someone said to us, or something that happened at work, or some fear that you have. And before you know it, you've created a scenario about that that probably isn't even close to reality, but you've begun to live that. And how you interact with other people and how you think and how you speak is created by this reality that's not even real. It's in your head. And when you begin to sit in silence with God, one of the things you do is you become aware of that. That's when we talk about awareness, or what Jesus called watchfulness. You begin to watch those thoughts and realize, I have no control of my life. It's just out of control. I thought I did. And then you have to make a decision, well, what am I going to do with that? Am I going to try to get this thing under control? And who can possibly do that? And then you realize, oh, there's something behind that. There's actually something deeper within me. And there's Christ. There's the Christ within. There's God who's dwelling in me. As Paul says, I'm actually the temple of God. Christ is there and he's waiting. He's been waiting for me to look inward and discover him. And in our gospel reading this morning, we find three characters, you might say, three people that we encounter that I want to talk about in terms of adoring Christ, a life that adores Christ. We find Judas, and we find Martha, and we find Mary. Let's talk about Judas first. Judas' thoughts becomes very clear to us are evil. They're just selfish. Judas is this person that walks in the world. He doesn't care about anybody but number one. And number one is himself. And that becomes very clear where his thoughts are, where he's allowed his thoughts to take him. They have taken him to a life of greed and of selfishness. This barrage of thoughts and desires that come to each of us, he latched on to the thoughts of Satan. In fact, in Luke's gospel, it says, Satan entered into Judas. And we can be very quick to judge Judas for what he did. But if you do spend some time just sitting and realizing that there's this constant barrage of thoughts that are coming into you and you really haven't paid much attention to them, that you very easily yourself can choose evil. That you very easily yourself, without even knowing it, can end up in a very bad place for your life. And that's why the writer of Proverbs tells us to guard our hearts. You remember in Proverbs 4:23, he says, above all, guard your hearts. Anything else that you do in life, before you think about doing anything else, the proverb writer says, guard your heart. And in the scriptures, the mind and the heart are very closely related. So Judas failed to guard his heart, and Satan gets a foothold, and that's the danger or the threat that comes to all of us. But if we develop this awareness of the presence of Christ, we learn not to listen to those thoughts. Or we learn that they're there, and we learn that they can very easily carry us down a road we don't want to go. How many of you have ever had a thought about something, and we've all done this. You create a thought about something, and then you have some emotions and feelings that build around it, and then you start to build a story around that, and you start to create this reality, and before you know it, you begin to enact it in the world. You know, it could be something as innocuous as the sky is blue. You have a thought, the sky is blue today. You look, oh, the sky is blue. Oh, I feel blue. You know, blue is the color that he was wearing when he said this. And you know what? He is this really mean person. And you know what? I bet his mom was just no good. I bet she was just a snake. And before you know it, you've created this whole story with all these different little plots in them. And it ain't true to anybody except you in your head. And Judas had created this reality for himself. He had allowed himself to go down this path that the money bag was for him. And I'm sure he was creating all kinds of reasons in his mind to justify reaching into that. What was the one he used in our story? Well, that money's there for the poor. Of course, he wanted more of there so he could reach into it. But unless we're paying attention to where our thoughts are leading us, and unless we learn to guard our hearts, we can easily go down the path of Judas. So there's Judas, and then there's Martha. We've actually met Martha before in the Scriptures, and actually Martha and Mary were together when we met them in the Scriptures. God bless Martha's. Man, we need Martha's in the world. Martha was a workhorse, man. The one story she shows up in Luke, Jesus is visiting a home again, as in this story, and Jesus was there. You remember Martha, what she was doing? I mean, she was busy as a bee. She was cooking, she was cleaning, she was making sure everything was just right, and she was rolling out the red carpet. And at one point, she looks over at Mary, and she sees Mary sitting at Jesus' feet, apparently doing nothing in her mind. And so she creates this story. Well, Mary's not doing anything over here, and I'm doing all the work. And she complains to Jesus. Jesus, why isn't Mary doing anything here? You remember what Jesus said? Jesus said, well, she's doing the one thing. Mary is doing the one thing necessary. She was sitting at the feet of Jesus and adoring him. And worshiping him, being in the presence and an awareness of Christ in her presence. And we'll talk more about that in a minute. But Martha is scurrying. She's always on the move. She's always accomplishing things. But here's the risk that Martha runs. And if you have a Martha personality, you probably are aware of this. Like I said, God bless Martha's. We all need to be more like Martha in many ways. We need to get off of our behinds and get to work sometimes and do things that need to be done. But Martha's run the risk of forgetting the one thing necessary. They get on the move. They're always accomplishing, they're working and doing this and that, and they forget why they're doing it. Why are you doing what you're doing? Why are you getting up and going to work every day? Why are you raising your family? Why are you taking care of the grandchildren? All the things that you're doing, we can easily forget the one thing necessary before we do anything else. And that is be in an awareness of the presence of Christ in our midst. Otherwise, everything else is for nothing because it's for the wrong reason. And so there's Martha. Another threat of facing Martha's is that they can also become Pharisaical. You know, look what I've done. Mary hasn't done anything, but look what I've done. So if you tend to be a Martha, God bless you, we need you. The world needs, churches need Marthas. But know what your temptation is. Know how to guard your heart, and that is to make sure that you spend time at the feet of Jesus. Finally, we get to Mary in our story. It's interesting when we find Mary in the Scripture. Mary, not the mother of Mary, mother Mary, the mother of Jesus, but Mary, the disciple of Jesus. That she's always focused on Jesus. She just adores him. She loves the Christ. And she's at his feet. She's gazing at him, just adoring what Jesus is, what Jesus means for her life. We always find Mary focused on Jesus. Remember in the Luke story, she's at the feet of Jesus, just listening and soaking it all in, whatever Jesus has to teach her. And here in our story in John's Gospel this morning, Mary takes this expensive jar of perfume or of nard. It cost a year's wages, and she breaks it open and she pours it on Jesus' feet and begins washing his feet with her hair, using the perfume in it. But what happens though? There's this fragrance that fills the whole room, and everybody starts noticing. Everybody says, where's that smell? Wow. And they see this adoration of the Son Jesus. Mary always wanted to be in the presence of Jesus. She always wanted to be aware that Jesus was with her. She wants every moment of her life, every thought that she entertains, to be focused on Jesus. So what's happening here? I see this story from a vantage point that it's trying to teach us the importance of awareness. Without awareness, we're like this ship that's just blown around without an anchor. And when life gets ugly, when there's ugly words, when there's someone who offends you, someone who doesn't live up to your expectations, someone who disappoints, or you have some disappointment in life, you're just thrown off kilter and you're spun into this spiral and you don't know how to respond. Or your life is just this constant barrage of crazy and disjointed thoughts and desires, and they're just sort of pushing you around and you really don't have any control over your life. If we're not aware of what's happening, we will sink. But those who trust in God, remember, are like Mount Zion. They are an unshakable mountain. So until you learn to enter into the silence, and what I mean by entering into the silence is realize that all this is going on the surface. Life is happening on the surface. The work and play and thoughts and people interacting with you and all these things are happening, and you're responding to them and you're commenting on them in their mind, and these things are happening, but then you're creating your whole story about it. It's interesting. If somebody walked into this room and danced to Michael Finnegan. You remember that old song? Let's say he did a little jig and did that. And then he walked out and left. And a reporter came in and asked you, what happened? There would be 50 different stories about what happened. Well, this guy came in and he disrupted church and it was just a mess. But somebody probably like Carolyn back there on the back row would say, this guy came in on a jig and it was the funniest thing I ever saw. I wish that happened every Sunday. Because we all see things from a different perspective. But if we were all in the awareness of God at that moment and sitting in his presence, we would all have a universal felt sense of what happened there too. We'd all have our surface interpretation, but we would also be in one in knowing something happened here this morning. And it might have been a God thing. But we would have missed it if we had not been practicing what it means to sit in the silence, that depth of soul that's below everything else. And learning to do that brings us closer to God. It brings us into his presence. It brings us into a watchfulness. And what we find is our thoughts don't own us. Our feelings and our emotions don't have to own us. Our desires don't have to own us. There's something deeper that we can connect with that is the very ground of who we are. And it's God. And he's in each one of us. And we can find it. We can encounter God. But getting to that place where we can reach him is called the silence. And what happens on the other side of that is when you encounter Christ, in your heart and in your mind, and you begin feeding your soul Christ, you begin to know a peace like you've never known before. There are holy powers that enter into you that you never knew that you could possibly possess. You find joy in the day, and you realize that more and more you've become Mount Zion, not of your own doing, but because of Christ there. And you realize that things don't bother me so much anymore. That person's comments really don't bother me so much anymore. What she said or what he did. Things come into a God perspective when you're on Mount Zion. But more than anything, your soul being fed with the mind of Christ endures forever, the psalmist says. Your soul becomes immortal in Christ. Later this spring, hopefully in May, if not by May and June, I'll get the dates out soon. On Tuesday, for 4 weeks, on a Tuesday night, going to have something called Silent Tuesdays, where we will learn to encounter God in the silence, what it means to form that awareness and how we do it. There's a great deal that I've been taught over the years, and I'm desiring to share it, and I feel like I've not really done this before in any meaningful way, and I feel like it's something that the world needs today by far, to find Christ, but as a way to find Christ. And perhaps it would be helpful to you or someone that you know. Sitting in silence is not just sitting there closing your eyes. There's a lot of work going on, and there's a way to do that work, and we'll learn together how to do that. So I'll get more information about that as that approaches. But in the meantime, I just invite you to know that Christ is there, and he's waiting for you to come within. He's waiting for you to go deep and to listen and to become aware of his presence, and you will be blessed. Our closing hymn this morning is found on page 451, a song that prays that we would have Christ as our vision. If you'll stand together, and we'll sing page 451.